Hello, friends. On today's show, we have guitars being replaced, 100 tiny homes for normal-sized people, some news about the language of my people, and a Michelin chef doing his most important work yet. Jessica, please give us the intro.
We all need that one friend, don't we? The one that, no matter how crazy things get around us, always has some good news to share? Hey, what if you had two friends like that? That's twice the good times. On the rocks, not for long, because everything sounds better when you're two beers in. Now, here are your hosts, Brett Weaver and Monica Ballard.
All right. Here we are, the barfly.
It turns out the bar hasn't flown anywhere.
It's not going anywhere.
It's sitting right here still.
Yeah. It's so dark in here, I'm really surprised that my face ID on my phone
actually
recognized me.
It's like, sure.
Because just a few moments ago, I lost my own straw in my drink.
It's so dark in here, I'm pretty sure I'm on the wrong podcast.
Yeah.
What?
No, it was funny coming in, and like when we first walked in and I put the stuff down and went to the bar, I kept talking, I turn around and I'm like, I didn't even know if you were behind me still. I think she's over there. But this is the way it is.
It is.
When you're listening to Two Beers In. A podcast about darkened rooms and lightened subjects.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Weaver. I'm enjoying a gin and tonic with a splash of Angostura bitters.
Do they make it to your liking?
Exactly to my liking.
Oh, good.
It also helps that it's $4.
I'm your co-host, Monica Ballard. I'm enjoying a very strong... rum and pineapple juice.
But is it good?
It took a few moments for me to get used to it. I'm used to it in a tall glass. They serve this in a short glass, yeah. And so it's kind of like, wow.
You have to
okay.
ask.
You have yeah, to ask. Yeah. I will next time.
And there's Doug over there.
Where? Oh, wait. Here he is.
I'm touching his face. I'm touching it. Doug, is that you?
A little higher. A little higher.
Man, you've got a big nose.
Yes, I do. Keep touching.
Why is it floppy?
Let me feel his face. No, that's Elon Musk.
Why are you saying hi that way?
It's not just a visual joke. Who knew?
What are you drinking, Doug?
I'm drinking a bourbon sour in the tall glass because I knew to ask this time.
Yeah.
I messed that up the other time.
Yep. We've got stories today. From all over the United States, and one from Europe.
So if we've got three stories, we've got two from the United States.
No, we've got four
stories.
We've got
four stories?
Four stories.
We do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You're not allowed to see one of them.
And yes.
That's a deep, dark secret.
That fourth story will surprise you. You'll never believe what happens next.
Clickbait.
Yep. Yeah. Let's start with clickbait out of L.A., shall we?
Sure.
So, I need to stop saying so. Guitar Center is replacing instruments lost in the L.A. Wildflowers.
Yes. Those L.A. wildflowers.
People pooping in wildflowers with a new initiative. So while organized sports, celebrities, and businesses have been rushing to try to make Los Angeles County whole again.
Including Texas's own H-E-B.
That's right. After the recent spate of wildfires.
Wow.
It's a rented tongue.
Oh, there's a reason for that.
Sure there
Guitar is. Center is playing its part, offering to replace lost musical instruments.
Aww.
So trying to make a living in as a musician is challenging, especially here in Austin and also in L.A.
Sure.
And if one were to lose a $2,000 guitar or a $6,000 piano, one can only imagine what it might do to them and how difficult, which makes me wonder if you're a pianist and you have a $6,000 piano, how are you getting that around?
Yeah, it does make marching band a lot more difficult.
Yes, that's true.
That is true.
Through the Guitar Center Music Foundation, the instrument supplier is inviting working musicians to apply for a special one-time grant to replace instruments and gear destroyed by the fires, up to $1,500. So you're not getting that $2,000 guitar back.
It's a help.
But maybe we
can
get...
Hopefully, if it's your livelihood, you've had it insured anyway.
That's right.
Didn't Guitar Center go into bankruptcy like 3 years ago?
For a minute, and then
it got
came out.
Better.
It got better.
Yeah.
Okay. No longer nuked.
That was because of COVID. COVID really screwed them over, as they did.
Oh, they'd had
businesses.
Years of declining sales.
Oh, yeah. No cash is handed out, and applications will require information on the kind of equipment that was lost and an approximate value before a replacement can be furnished. It's not like, hey, I lost my $60 ukulele. Yeah. Please give me a $6,000 ukulele. Applicants must be from L.A., also invited to apply our music programs and institutions. So according to NME, I think it's the National Music Educators, applying institutions must conduct in-school music classes in which the students make music, after-school music programs that are not run by the school, community music programs which offer music instruction to the community, or music therapy programs in which the participants actively make music. So them's the rules.
Yeah.
And I've got a few friends who actually lost houses in L.A.
So they don't get a house back, but they might have a guitar.
But you can have a guitar.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
You got to start somewhere.
You can play it in the camp.
I think the blues are going to make a comeback.
Yes.
I woke up this morning and my house was gone.
I wish I had some marshmallows. Anyway. Let's go to the other side of the United States.
All right. And another disaster.
And
another company helping
in
a disaster.
It really was me looking up the one, and then I go, I wonder if there's anything going on. Because I know a lot of people are saying, well, yeah, all these fires are happening
outside
in California. Let's forget about what's going on.
Right.
In the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then this popped up, which I will comment on. Why don't you take it?
Sure. Lowe's donates 100 tiny homes to Carolina families waiting for rebuilt housing after hurricane flooding. Many families in western North Carolina were faced the holiday season still in need of perfect housing after Hurricane Helene devastated their towns. But thanks to Lowe's relief efforts and hundreds of volunteer home builders, dozens of tiny homes were donated to families and installed in time for Christmas.
Yay!
The tiny homes, which include heat and all the necessities like, this is what gets me.
Here we go.
Kitchen.
Yes.
A bathroom.
Yes.
Two full-size beds.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Allows families to remain in the neighborhood while their permanent home is rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Each home includes fresh seasonal greenery, furnishings, and decor, all donated by Lowe's.
All right.
Kelly Graham has lived in the mountains near Asheville for 24 years, and when the floodwaters receded, there was mold left behind and no heat, but she didn't want to go anywhere because she couldn't leave all her animals. That's why she was overcome with emotion when she saw her new temporary home for the first time 10 days ago.
Yeah.
And this story is probably a couple weeks old, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the project came together when Lowe's Senior Director of Community Relations posed a crazy idea to an old friend, Danny Kelly, the co-owner of Kelly McCardle Construction in Charlotte. And they got together and got volunteers and all the supplies lined up, and they built these tiny homes in a Charlotte warehouse.
Okay.
Built 16 with the help of 400 volunteers who signed up to assemble the 8x16-foot homes right before the holidays. And then Lowe's is purchasing another 50 homes built by Incredible Tiny Homes at its Newport, Tennessee facility. 67 units to give families who need a home for the holidays, with an additional 33 delivered by early January.
Right.
So Good on them. This is
so tremendous. What's funny about this is I remember back to Katrina when all the FEMA homes were being put up, and everybody kept saying, why don't they just build tiny homes instead of doing these FEMA houses, and then they can just give them to them. And remember, FEMA was like, no, we can't do that because that'll just encourage them. To do what?
Yeah.
To do what? And ended up, there was, for years afterwards, if you would drive down I-10, there would be these huge parking lots full of these FEMA homes just falling apart. And getting mold in them and doing all of
that. It was also going to take a lot longer to build those than they was to put up, you know, temporary FEMA stuff.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Cool thing. You
we
know,
saw that in Iraq.
The people who delivered the homes from Charlotte to the Asheville area, people who haul NASCAR equipment. That's
what they use.
Yes, NASCAR haulers.
NASCAR roadies?
Sure.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is they'll be available for purchase as rental properties not too long from now.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What's the address?
Yeah. Once they get their houses built, they can do it like as a mother-in-law house or an Airbnb.
Sure. Rent that sucker out. Yeah.
If only I knew a slumlord that'd be interested.
Yeah.
All right, this next one's right up your alley.
It is absolutely up my alley.
Yeah.
What's funny is I kind of disagree with the first part, so that's why I added the second part to it.
Okay, all right.
Is it about music no one's heard of?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man.
Nope. Since 1968, French teachers have come to Louisiana classrooms to preserve French language through immersion. So CODAFIL, which is the the Council for the Development of French in Louisiana, CODAFIL, the Southern, well, in I know this is happening all over Louisiana, but Louisiana's enjoyed the fruits of the partnership of nearly 60 years, and every scholastic year invites teachers from French-speaking countries around the world to teach in Louisiana to preserve the city's unique heritage. So they already have 155 teachers working in 14 parishes, which is basically like a county. Yeah. In Louisiana, you have a parish instead of a county.
Right, sure.
And more than 40 schools across Louisiana. They come not only from France, but Senegal, Ivory Coast, Belgium, and Cameroon. It means the world to us to have a long-standing relationship with France since the beginning. Peggy Feehan told NOLA, without that cooperation, that's a lot of kids that wouldn't have a French teacher. So here's the problem with this. It's great that they're learning French.
But it's not the French they speak there in
it's
Louisiana.
It's not Cajun French.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spotted that immediately.
So that's been a problem that's gone on for years to where they're like, because when my mother was growing up, it was forbidden to speak French in the schoolyard. And in fact, they would be punished if they spoke French.
Yeah. Sacre bleu.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a whole thing to that. Like, through my family, and this is a known history. And so then in the 60s, they said, well, we're going to bring French back, but not the French that you actually know.
Right, not Acadian French.
So it's become a problem because for the longest time, they were saying, well, French is French. It's all the same thing.
Go, let's ask Canadians that,
yes,
shall we?
Really?
And it's been proven that because of Cajun French being, for 200 years, they were on their own.
Split off completely.
They developed their own enough idioms and changes to where things mean it's totally different.
It's a different dialect completely.
But the good thing about that is now there's been a couple of books that were already written and in about the 70s that there was you guys have seen on my bookshelf, the Cajun French dictionary.
Sure, yeah.
And how to speak Cajun, which everybody thinks is a joke. And I'm like, it's not a joke. But not only that, then.
And how would you say it's not a joke in Cajun?
See, there's the problem.
Oh, yeah. You have the
he
book.
He doesn't actually read the
I
book.
I haven't read the book. Yes. No. But here's the good thing.
He doesn't speak Cajun.
I don't speak Cajun.
He's been repulsed by his people.
Yes. Yeah. I was repulsed
shunned
by my people.
Trying to forget his
I'm
background.
I don't find them repulsive. Okay. They repulsed me.
Okay.
But recently there's been popped up like on Facebook and places like that, spoken French forums to where people are talking back and forth and trying to, hey, my grandmother used to say this. What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
Or how do you say it the right way? And so then there's
it means that?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then there's another guy. There's a guy, Jordan Thibodeau, who is a musician out of Appaloosa, Louisiana, who he tells jokes every day in Cajun French.
Uh-huh.
And so it's all the classic Boudreaux, you know, and T-Bud and all of these jokes. And they're really funny. It's really funny. But it's a way to continuing things on. And in the show notes, you will see that I have added two more things that have come into, that have happened over the just like the last year. There is a Cajun-American French-speaking style translator. So somebody has created a good to where you type it in, and by AI, it does a fairly decent job of giving you what you how you would say it in Cajun French.
Okay.
And then there's also Cajun-French.com, which is now a site to where you can take classes for $20 a month. You can take classes and get into immersion.
All
into
right.
Cajun French.
Now you don't have to read the books.
No, now I'm
right.
Like,
Brett will eventually learn Cajun.
I will.
Right before his funeral.
I mean, I only know. I only
can learn to say, I don't feel well.
Howie.
I only know things like, ça défait pas plus mon chou, which means that doesn't ruffle a wrinkle in my ass.
Okay.
That was
all
something
right.
My grandmother used to say.
All right.
Your dating tips are awful.
Yep. And, and you know, there's the, well, there's.
So basically what they're doing is changing immersion to waterboarding. Is
yes.
Is that how?
Well, okay. But, okay. I mean, the reality is it's a dying language.
Yeah.
It's yeah. happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have so many cousins that, you know, English first. I'm like, who are you? You know, English is for Americans. I'm like, but we're. Do you not? I
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
And but the problem is since I've not had kids, I'm not going to have kids. Then continuing the language through me is not going to happen.
Right.
But
oh,
luckily,
is that your excuse?
That's,
all right.
Yeah,
yes,
that's what I'm
yeah.
going with.
I'm not having kids because I didn't want to learn Cajun.
Cajun
French.
French.
Right.
No, it's just the opposite. I tried to learn Cajun French. I did not do it, therefore I cannot have kids.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be hilarious if EK would suddenly just start spewing Cajun French at me. I'd be like, what are you? What you think
who
I've
are
been,
you?
She just goes, you think I've been in that office by myself just not doing anything? I thought you were drawing. Oh, I was doing more than that? Yeah. I thought you were listening to Game Grumps. You didn't notice the accent? No, I didn't. So, yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like it started out going, here's a thing to be happy about. Although,
but
they
hey,
kind of didn't
please.
Do it exactly right. But there's been...
We're teaching you an adjacent language.
Yeah. Yeah. That would... yeah. We're going to teach you Old English is what we're going
right.
to do.
That's right.
Exactly.
It'd be like me growing up at Catholic school if the nun said, oh, Latin only.
Latin only.
English immersion. Let's start with Chaucer.
Oh, my God.
So for our last story, this is about a guy named Adams Simmons who opened a kitchen called Home Kitchen. And he's a Michelin star. In fact, he's gotten two Michelin stars.
Uh-huh.
Those are the ones that cook with tires.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
They start a tire fire.
It is an organization from that same company.
Yeah, it was a road trip guide originally. Yeah. Yeah.
The Michelin-starred chef shares the motivation and meaning behind opening Home Kitchen in Primrose Hill, a fine dining restaurant staffed by homeless people. Well, formerly homeless people.
Taco Bell.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
And I will add to that when we go through the story.
Okay. Fine dining restaurants open every day in London, but restaurants that are actively trying to make the world a better place, we could do with a few more of those. Okay, thanks. Most chefs who open a tasting menu restaurant might have their eyes on a Michelin star and perhaps want to turn a decent profit at the end of the day. But Adam Simmons has his heart set on a more altruistic goal. The Michelin star chef has just helped launch Home Kitchen, a fine dining destination in Primrose Hill. This is in London, as was said. Staffed almost entirely by homeless people. It's a humble restaurant with a big heart, brought together by a legion of charities, chefs, private organizations, and social enterprises to make a real difference in the world through the medium of food. The aim of the project is to put an end to homelessness, which is a very big task, while also tackling the longstanding issue of rising job vacancies within the hospitality industry. Obviously, the food is important. It serves both an a la carte and tasting menu used seasonal high-quality produce. But at its core, Home Kitchen is an idea built around the idea that people about the people that run it. So the biggest challenges of my career, Adam says.
It's the biggest challenge.
Oh, yes, says Adam. To put that into context, this is a man who spent decades working at some of the UK's best and most prestigious restaurants.
Like what? Name some.
Like the McDonald's. Ritz.
Okay.
Le Gavroche and Raymond Blanc's Le Manoir before going to win Michelin stars himself at multiple restaurants. First at Innisfree in Wales, and later at his eponymous restaurant, Adam Simmons, at Danesfield House.
Oh, that sounds...
On the Thames in the Shire. Yes. Yeah. But turning Home Kitchen from an idea into reality, a real functioning concept, has been challenging as it looks on paper. Unlike other restaurants, Home Kitchen deals with issues far beyond having to pay the bills every month. There's a constant risk that any of its employees could end up sleeping without a roof over their head. Even in this process, we've had one of the guys made homeless so he can't turn in, explains Adam. At any given time, we could be short-staffed, and we have to react to that. So there is a support system in place to ensure issues like those are dealt with swiftly. Each member of staff, this is amazing, each member of staff employed by the project has a caseworker who finds them accommodation as quickly as possible should that situation arise. But it just goes to show the daily challenges that come with running a business like this. Naturally, a lack of stability is going to have a knock-on effect on working life in the kitchen. When they're under that pressure of not having somewhere to live or sleeping on the kitchen floor, which I know one of them has done, they don't get a good night's sleep, and this is a vicious cycle that people get into. So beyond that, there's the technical element of, you know, they're bringing people on that have no cooking skills. Like, they maybe never cooked before, and they've got to get them ramped up to be able to do these things. It's not just like, they're not like students that have gone to cooking school.
Right, culinary school or something like that. Sure. You're
right. They're starting from zero. And which means it can take 2 to 3 years to get them up to speed. But the idea is, if they stick around and put in the work, the company will do, you know, work with them and try to get something going with that as well.
I wonder about the psychological impact of doing all of this work and then looking at the menu and realizing that there's no possibility that this is a meal that you would ever purchase for yourself. Because the prices have got to be Michelin star prices.
It's a mammoth challenge, and there's clearly some sort of ulterior motive at play for Adam to take on a project like this. In fact, it's only in the last few years since COVID that the chef has turned his attention from Michelin kitchens to socially conscious work. It all started while he was working at a soup kitchen in London in 2020, helping its co-founder Alex Brown feed over 100 people a day, when he had the idea to help the homeless by giving them a platform in the hospitality industry.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago when I was telling you that Chili's kind of disappeared from my mind's eye.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people who could afford Chili's would kind of leave me behind when I couldn't.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, it seems to me like if I was working in a place where they had $150 meals or whatever, it would be hard to
That is the question, is they're not really saying that restaurant is trying to get a Michelin star. He's a Michelin star chef.
Ah.
They're not necessarily trying to get a Michelin star because he says, we know that it takes precision and a level that these guys are not going to get. These people are not going to get to that level.
Okay.
But we can put a good meal
so
out.
So you're saying the pricing might be more reasonable?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
And I'm sure that a lot, like a lot of restaurants, you get to, it's not like the food that's prepared is totally for the public and
right.
not for you.
Well,
in order to know what tastes good
yeah.
and how it's prepared well, you have to eat it yourself.
There's kind of a combo situation because you're right in that, yeah, it must be weird for them to think, if I wasn't working here, I couldn't afford this food. I wouldn't be eating this food. But on the same, stance, you're saying you're going to learn what this food is, and we're going to give you this food, and there's meal.
Well,
there's
it's definitely
staff
a
meals.
Reminder of a difference in status.
Yeah,
you can't avoid that.
But it's also to give them a path to get out of the one status into
sure.
a better one.
Yeah.
That actually scrambles a lot of people's heads that are trying to do that, though.
Sometimes it does. I mean, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't try.
No, I'm not saying that they
yeah.
shouldn't try.
Yeah.
Why would I say that?
No. But, I mean, I understand what you're talking about.
But, yeah, for a lot of people, it's like, whoa, I never had this shot, and I'm going to fuck this up, and they freak out, you know?
Yeah. So, but the project hits home on a deeper level. The chef has spoken openly about his struggles with addiction and mental health while working in a professional kitchen over the years, and he's acutely aware of how lucky he was to receive the help that he did. So it's paying it back. If someone hadn't been there for him in his hour of need, his life would have taken a different trajectory.
Yeah, and that's true. When you see a person who gets that level and then they go back and they start opening up doors for other people, it's usually a person who is thankful that they've moved from here to here to here.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
want to see yeah. other people on that pathway. That's a blessing to watch other people get to make those kind of jumps that you made.
Yeah. Now he's the ambassador for the Burnt Chef Project.
It's about time we burned them.
Yeah.
Take that, chefs.
Like,
you're on fire, chef.
It's all about mental health. Thanks, chef.
Yes, you're on fire, chef.
An organization that offers mental health support and education for the hospitality industry, where he regularly speaks freely about his own experience of addiction and burnout to help both employers and employees navigate mental health issues in the workplace.
Ah, I see. So he ran a Michelin star, he burned out, he opened a McDonald's and got the homeless to work there.
That's exactly
right. All right, I understand
yeah.
how this
yep,
story goes
exactly
now.
That's what happened.
Yep.
I'm
tracking now. All
yeah.
this makes sense.
Yeah, there are commissary chefs who come out of catering college wet behind the ears and still need years of work. It takes years. We're dealing with a very different group of people, and we need to be mindful of that.
Oh, okay. And later on in the story, it says that he kind of, I don't want to say dumbed down the menu.
Right.
But he did make it so that the people he was training could understand what it is that they're cooking and how it was cooked.
Yeah.
And so he took things back to basics
mm-hmm.
so that he could get a consistent product that's cooked properly and dressed to a certain standard, and they go through that.
Yeah. And there's still a few things to iron out, but his sights are set high. Awards, definitely. A Michelin star Well, that remains to be seen. His ultimate goal, though, is for Home Kitchen to be rolled out across the country so that the project can help as many people as possible.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's not about us, but the platform we're going to give to so many people, that's the most important thing. It's for them.
And if they run out of meat and one of the guys isn't working out,
they can go eat the rich. The rich will be right there. They have a supply.
Speaking of eating the rich, I know a homeless guy who works at the Austin Club.
Oh.
As a chef.
Okay.
And I got in a conversation with him one time and about the Wooten building on 10th.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I see the building is empty a lot, but every now and then I'll see people when I'm in my car across the street. And I said, do you spend a lot of time in your car watching the Wooten building? And he said, well, I live in my car. And I was like, oh. And he said, but I work as a chef down the alleyway there at the Austin Club. And I said, that's remarkable. I mean, wow.
Doing what he's got
to
do.
He said, I'm just working as hard as I can to get a place of my own. And until then, the blue car across the street there, that's my house. That's where I live.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've had a few friends that have been in that situation. Me too. In fact, I was only homeless for like a week. That was in Nacogdoches when a roommate bailed on me and I couldn't afford the rent and my car died. I was like, well, I guess I'm here now.
Yeah.
And he completed the rest of the country song as well.
Yeah.
That brings new meaning to the term be here now.
Yeah. And then.
But, okay, we're here now.
And then my girlfriend.
Welcome home.
Reached out to some Elon Musk looking fucker and said, hey.
I was wondering if he was going to tie that all together.
Do you think you could find a place for my boyfriend? And he said, yes. And that's how Doug and I met.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
It's an origin story.
Yep.
I'd closed on my condo in the middle of the semester, and it was like I was never going to get a roommate, and I needed money. So I was like, all right, we'll take this idiot in.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I guess he looks all right.
And we never had a fight.
Oh, well. And that was the end of that story. Moving on. What's the next
move
one?
Move on, moving on, moving on. You can move on to patreon.com/2
Hey, nice.
To help us not be homeless when it comes to this podcast.
Right, because God knows your donations go directly to our housing and food.
When it comes to this podcast. In fact, I've been thinking about where we're hosted and all that.
Yeah.
And I was going to take the money that's been given us to see if I can find a monthly place to maybe get better exposure for the show.
Oh.
So, just something I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Like, oh, look, we've got this amount. We could probably do this. Because it was always before I was doing the cheapest way I possibly could until I was able to make enough money to put us on a better platform, you know,
yes,
to build from there. So, yeah, Two Beers In. You can go to twobeersin.com and check out our website and give us ideas on how to change it and make things better. Or the show by going to twobeersin@weightlesspod.com. And we appreciate everything that you do. Tell your friends. Tell your kids. Hide your wives. I don't know.
Call the neighbors.
Yep.
Saints his enemies driven before him. What's going on?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
What is happening?
He's rambling.
Yes. We're rambling.
He's rambling. He's rambling.
Rambling. We're going to close out. I just happened to hear this song today, and I thought that I've been watching the show Loot.
Okay.
With this Maya Rudolph is in it. It's a really good show. I've been enjoying a lot of really good shows, and the great thing about Loot is it has such a great soundtrack, and it's like 70s funk, you know, 70s and 80s funk, and it's just like, yep, That's what I want to hear most of the time.
Okay. So you're saying the show Loot has a really good soundtrack and does not use an actual lute.
It does not use it's
no,
L-O-O-T.
No, it's L-O-O-T, not L-U-T.
It's about her as a billionaire.
Not her as a Renaissance performer.
She's not a bard?
No, she is not. Huh. Though her mother was. But, yeah, so we're going to close the song, the show with Can I Kick It by A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah.
All right.
And thank you for listening. I have been Brett, and I continue to be Brett, and I will continue to drink gin and tonics with a dash of Angostura bitters.
I'm Monica Ballard. I continue to be that, but I do need a refill on pineapple juice and rum.
And we'll do it in a tall glass this
yes,
time.
Yes, yes.
And Doug?
And I'm Elon Musk, and I had a bourbon sour.
That's right.
And so, billions of dollars.
Billions of dollars, and you have a weird way of saying hi. listen to this song, and we'll talk to you next week.
To all the people who can quest like a tribe does. Before this, did you really know what live was? Comprehend to the track force, why? Cuz getting mentions on the tip of the vibe buzz. Rock and roll to the beat of the funk fuzz. Wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug. If you feel the urge to freak, do the jitterbug. Come and spread your arms if you really need a hug. Afrocentric living is a big shrug. A life filled with, that's what I love. A lower plateau is what we're above. If you diss us, we won't even think of. We'll nip of the dog and give a big shove. This rhythm really fits like a snug glove. Like a box of positives, it's a plus love. As the trial flies high like a dove.
Follow us for the funky behavior. Make a note on the rhythm we gave ya. Feel free, drop your pants, yak your hair. Do you like the garments that we wear? I instruct you to be the obeyer. A rhythm recipe that you'll savor. Doesn't matter if you're minor or major. Yes, the tribe of the game, we're the player. As you inhale like a breath of fresh air.
news, everyone.